show that you've ever been in. It's the Cozy Zone.
Cozy Zone.
It's the Cozy Zone that you've ever been in. It's the Cozy Zone. It's the
Cozy Zone.
Zoners, Ben Weber here. It is first thing in the morning. I just fed the cats. I'm sitting at our living room table. We just got it from IKEA. It's the one that folds and has drawers. It turns into like a small, tiny rectangle, but can fold out into a maybe something that seats six. It's very impressive. We hide some dish towels in it and some unfinished New Year's cards. I have my Morning Pages notebook right here in front of me. I'm doing the artist's way. I'm in week four. I did my reading deprivation last week, so you're supposed to not read anything. I actually don't read that much anyway, so what I did is I staved off podcasts, and it was unbelievable sort of how addicted to podcasts I am. But I didn't do any of the tasks, and so I'm redoing the week, and I have the tasks here in front of me on some squares of note paper. So I have to describe myself at 80, and I write a letter to myself as my 80-year-old self. Now, let's see how that goes. Also, I have to write a letter to myself from my 8-year-old self. So looking at the future and the past, Peanut's here. She's about to jump up on my lap. Let's see here. We have Review a Life Pie. So see how the balance is going in terms of creativity, relationships, exercise, things like that. I'll do that later. Write Your Own Artist's Prayer. That one I have a lot of questions about. We'll see if I manage to do that one. I'd go on an extended artist date. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Artist's Way, Morning Pages are the act of writing three pages of stream of consciousness every morning, first thing when you wake up. And then you also take yourself on an artist date, something you do by yourself to nourish your inner artist. And Julia Cameron recommends that you go on an extended artist date, one that lasts an entire day or weekend. I'll see how we can do. Throw out one low self-worth outfit. Okay. I'm pretty into all my clothes. There must be a shirt that here's Daryl. There must be a shirt that I don't like, maybe some pants. But there's a specific weekend uniform that I like. You know, that I don't want to throw. It's sort of, you know, grungy, but I really feel liberated when I wear it, so I'm keeping that. Describe your ideal environment. Now that's interesting, because my ideal environment is very related to a cozy zone and something I'm striving to discover here. So I'm thinking, I'm in a cabin in the mountains. The sun is just rising. It's warm. It's summer. There's a mountain breeze. There's a beautiful wooden workspace. Oh, Daryl. Daryl just fell. Okay. There's a view near the window. I have some coffee near me. And it's quiet. Maybe a few of my friends and loved ones are there working on their art. That would be ideal. Oh. Excuse me. The cats do make me sneeze. So, anyway, looking forward to working on the Artist's Way this week. yesterday I just celebrated the birthday of my good friend Ben Wellington at a delicious Japanese restaurant in the West Village, and it's the kind where you grill your own meat on a built-in hibachi on the table, and it was very, very delicious and decadent. But the bathroom of this restaurant has one of those incredible Japanese toilets with electronically warmed seat and jets of water that cleanse your butthole, and a drying feature that is very important at the end of it all. Tim Manley was there, so was Nicolette, Cozy Zone celebrities, and they were chatting with each other, actually, about their experiences of Cozy Zone, and they said that in listening to each other's episodes, they actually learned about different aspects of me, which is something they didn't expect. Sam Gold, the winner of the Cozy Zone Messy Desk Sweepstakes, ventured with me to the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, and he said something that was very moving, Cozy Zone related. He said that I am more than the host of this podcast, but I'm actually the protagonist, that everyone is following my journey as I journey out to visit other people's Cozy Zones. And so, me, Ben Weber, your protagonist, has ventured forth from New York City to go to Philadelphia, where I was lucky enough to snag a few hours with my friend and grad school colleague Jess Levy in her Cozy Zone, and that's at Studio 34, which is a yoga and art space in West Philly. I'm so excited to share this episode with you. I love Jess Levy. I love the way that she moves through the world. She is tall and slender and elegant, comedic, wise, passionate, humble, and genuine. She breathes in the world deeply and inspires delight in community. Everyone, thanks so much for listening to episode 3 of Cozy Zone.
Is it multidirectional? Do I have to talk into it?
No, I think it. Yeah, just like that is perfect.
Like I'm going to eat it?
Yeah, like you're going to eat it. Jess, thanks so much for inviting me here.
Thanks for coming.
You brought 3 clementines with you?
Yeah, well, I brought one, and then I thought, well, what if Ben wants one? And then I thought, well, what if Nicolette comes with Ben? I thought I better bring 3.
They're sitting here in the middle of us on the couch next to the little digital recorder, which I just learned you also have.
Yes, an earlier model.
Earlier model.
Sounds like.
That you got to record family histories.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, what is that like? Was that the reason that you got that digital recorder for that sole purpose?
I think so. I think it was. Because, yeah, what I had before that was like a dictation recorder. Mm-hmm. And
with like little tapes?
No, it was digital also, but I guess the sound quality wasn't that good. And maybe this is all sort of speculation because I don't really remember. But I think the idea was that I wanted, if I was going to record my family, I wanted it to be like a decent recording, not just kind of a, you know, like something that you'd actually be able to understand and want to listen to again, even though I don't think I ever have. But
you have it.
I have it, exactly.
And it's in really nice quality, similar to this little guy.
Yeah.
So, Jess, this is the 3rd ever episode of Cozy Zone that I've recorded. And I'm really pleased to say this is not in my hometown now, or of New York City. We're in Philadelphia, in West Philadelphia. Can you tell us a little bit about where we are right now?
This is Studio 34. It's a yoga studio, a wellness studio, and an arts and music venue that was started in like 2008, something like that. And it's named Studio 34 because the 34 trolley goes down Baltimore Avenue, right in front of the studio. And yeah, it's a great space. It was kind of started as a community space. And so there, where we're sitting is, this is the lounge, which is a community lounge, which means anytime the studio is open, anyone can come and just hang out here, regardless of whether you're taking a class or whatever. It's just a space for public use.
It's really, really special. And like, I don't know, I just was in the bathroom and I washed my hands, and my hands smell like this beautiful, like, soap. maybe like a Dr. Bronner's type soap, or it's not exactly that, but I don't know. There's just this unbelievable, surprising calm here. We're on this nice 3-person couch. There's like a few other couches here, a lot of pillows and plush things around us. There's a little stage, and on that stage is all of the sort of leftovers from a Fun A Day art show that we went to last night.
Yeah.
And in fact, front and center is, I think, one of your favorite elements of the Fun A Day art show. Can you tell us about that?
It's like a paper hat a day, which these amazing paper hats that are in different animals and things, some of which are the hat, the opening of the hat is like the mouth of the animal.
There's a lot of sharp teeth fringing many of the hats.
Yeah, there is.
Paper teeth,
yeah. Not too dangerous.
No. And there's also this colorful paper letter quote that is encircling most of the space.
I often have a hard time. Like, I've tried to read it a few times, and I feel like I'm never positioned in quite the right place to actually see all of it.
Well, should we see if we can do it?
Okay. But we're going to have to get off the couch.
That's okay.
Let's see. What I want to say is that the present is what your life is. And you're capable of choosing what that will be, darling citizens. So come to the pond, maybe?
I think it's
pond.
Yeah, come to the pond.
Come to the pond or the river of your imagination or the harbor of
your longing. And put your lips to the world and live your life. And there's a little paper circle that's swinging in the ventilation. And it says, here comes, we're about to see it.
Oh, Mornings at Blackwater by Mary Oliver. Excerpt.
Yes. That was something that caught my attention as soon as I came in last night. And I just really loved the colors and the paper and the letters. What I want to say is that the present is what your life is, and you are capable of choosing what that will be, darling citizen. So come to the pond or the river of your imagination or the harbor of your longing and put your lips to the world and live your life. I think that's kind of fitting for this podcast too. I mean, we have to hold these microphones very close. We have to put our lips to the world. And, you know, this is, being that this is the third episode, you know, the mission statement of Cozy Zone, of this podcast, is still very much in formation. But I think about it a lot, and it's trying to find those places where, I don't know, we can feel safe and calm and relaxed and creative and abundant. And this is the place that you chose. And I'm curious, I don't know why this place is your cozy zone.
Yeah. Place is really important to me. the qualities of place. So, I mean, I love the concept of the podcast and this idea of what creates those spaces for people. And And I find, like, just being back in Philadelphia after having been in New York for most of four years, you know, I like the place was a lot of what I wanted to come back to, but I have a very mixed relationship with Philadelphia and even with this neighborhood. That it's just interesting that there's kind of like a push and pull of the certain feelings of just comfort and like and acceptance and all of that, and then in the mix there's a little bit of like sadness or nostalgia or feeling of tension or of not being quite at home or something. When I I was living here since 2005, mostly, like right before I moved to New York, I was here most of the time between 2005 and 2010, but I took about 9 months to go away to just like actually get away from Philadelphia. I was just, I felt like I just couldn't be here. I didn't want to be here. Yeah. I was kind of done. I went to Mexico and then I went to work on a farm in Western Washington. And then I it was like a time period where I was really resisting getting like a return ticket to places. Like I went to Mexico without a return ticket. I was like, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. I'm just going to go. And then I went to work in Washington State thinking like, well, maybe I'll move back to Seattle or something. You know, I used to live there. Maybe I want to just check out the Pacific Northwest and see if that's where I want to be now. And so when that time kind of came to an end and the summer came to an end and I was like, I still didn't know really where I wanted to be. I ended up coming back here and with a lot of anxiety and trepidation and fear, I think actually about like what it would mean to come back. And when I came back, I went through some time of like feeling pretty depressed and not knowing what I wanted to do. And then I finally kind of got stuff together, got myself a place to live. And I started coming here. So
to Studio 34.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was living at the time I was living. So we're at, like near 45th in Baltimore. I was living at like 44th and Larchwood, which is basically just like two, three blocks from here. And this place had like fairly recently started up, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe had been around for like a year or mm-hmm. something. And they had a work exchange program and I wasn't working really. Like I came back like basically, right when the recession was hitting and I had been not working here. I'd been away. So I was looking for work and I had a lot of time on my hands and I was like, you know, this seems like a place where, it's sort of a nice environment to just hang out. I can staff the table as this, woman over here is doing and like, and bank hours to take classes and not have to spend money. Cause that's how that works. You like put in volunteer time and then you can get credit to take classes. And then I met, the person who was at that time coordinating a lot of the volunteer work exchange stuff. Like I was working, I think Monday mornings when it was really quiet here. And he was often sitting at the front desk too. And we got to talk and his name's Jason and we just like started up a friendship that lasted for most of the time that I lived here before I moved to New York. And, he was like a very sort of caring, like good presence in my life for that time period. Like it, kind of like I felt like I needed somebody who was sort of like my go-to, like a go-to person for me. And he kind of became one of those people. So I spent a lot of time here because I liked the place, but also because, you know, like he was here and we would hang out, or I would like come to a class he was teaching, or just drop in and say hi or whatever. So it started to feel kind of like another home space for me.
So Jess, sort of this sounds like this place is the happy ending of like a very, very long journey of yours. Like I think, I mean, they're sort of hearing, so your life story, at least place wise, if we were to map out like where you've been in your life, you were born in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Then your parents and you moved to Texas. No.
Eventually. Yeah.
So you grew up in New Jersey?
No. I was born in New Jersey when I was 6 months old. We moved to England for a year and a half.
Okay.
Then we moved back to New Jersey.
Okay.
Then when I was four, we moved to Aruba. I lived in Aruba until I was about eight.
Okay.
And then we moved back to New Jersey. And then when I was 10, we moved to Houston and Houston area. And my parents are still there. I lived in the suburbs, and then I lived in the city for the last 2 years of high school before I left for college.
Okay. And you went to college?
Near here at Haverford. It's okay. Just, you know, outside of Philly.
Right. And so after that?
after college, I moved to Seattle.
Right.
And then Seattle, after I left Seattle, it was like 4.5 years there. I moved around. I just kind of took some time before I started grad school. I went to Toronto for grad school.
Yep.
And then after grad school, I moved to Philly. So 2005.
Then we met in New York City for your second grad school.
Right.
My first grad school.
Right.
And then you're back here in Philly.
And you were part of the reason that I ended up going to that program. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. So we met.
We met at the first year students in the applied theater program, like the first class to finish. They were doing their thesis presentations,
yes.
And I just remember this moment. We went out to. I think I went out to like get a snack or something like that, and
maybe
we were
Starbucks or something.
Yeah,
and I was like making Starbucks jokes about like, yeah, this is like the best spot in New York. Like, and, yeah, you know.
And I think I confessed to you that I was like, I can't imagine living in this place. And we were standing on the corner of like 6th Avenue and
31st Street,
yeah,
and which is one of the worst places in New York City, and that's where our grad school is located.
Right.
And I mean, what did I say? I probably said like, yeah, like it's awful.
Yeah.
But there are like ways to sort of escape. And I think that's also like that impetus, or like what I told you is probably something I was trying to tell myself also.
Yeah.
You know, because
I can see that.
I have been in New York. The question that's sort of forming around all of this is like, you have moved around a lot and I have not. Like, I'm very interested in like, I'm relatively sedentary. I put down a lot of roots, and I'm like so curious to hear what it's like to move around so much, and like, what are the inciting incidents that inspire you to pick up and leave, and then like how you feel okay in like the new place. Like that's like advice I want from you at some point in our conversation. But to finish our, our grad school story. So yeah, so I said, oh yeah, you know, there's ways to like be okay in New York.
Yeah.
And I guess you believed me.
I think I did. Or maybe I wanted to.
Yeah.
And you just seemed like, you seemed like a nice guy, you know? And yeah, I think I wanted to believe that was possible, but I think I needed to hear it. Like, I needed to hear someone say, like, I live here. I think what you said, part of what you said was, you know, I live here, but I hardly ever come here,
right,
like to this part of the
oh,
city.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, God.
You know, and just to put it in the perspective that, like, this is just one part of the city, and it's not even a part that, like, you know, you would choose to spend that much time, but there are other parts that are more livable. And
Did you move to Crown Heights? Was that the first place?
Well, I first lived with my friend Eric, who was up on the Upper West Side.
Oh, nice.
And we were, for like 5 weeks, he shared his studio apartment with me while I was looking for a place.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to Crown Heights. And I lived in the same apartment for the whole time I was there.
It's a beautiful apartment.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I love that apartment of yours. I'm curious too, like, did you have places where you could take refuge in New York? Like, what ended up being your sort of cozy zones in New York?
My apartment.
Yeah.
My apartment was like the main one. And I think that's why, I mean, it took me a while to sort of find that place. And then, I felt so lucky when I did, and just with the way the space was laid out and everything, it just felt like a good, and I, you know, I was debating about, do I live with, how many people do I live with? And I didn't really want to spend all the money to live on my own.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't want to live with more than one person, because I really don't want to have to manage too many like moving parts. I really want my apartment to be like a refuge for me from the city.
Totally.
And it was that for the most part.
That's really good. So, how was your roommate?
The first roommate I had, she was fine. She was like a good roommate in the sense of like, you know, she kept things clean. She was really responsible with stuff and just like all the basic things that you kind of need a roommate to be. I wouldn't say we really hit it off super well. Like, I never hear from her now.
Yeah.
And then I had this terrible roommate search of like that just dragged on and on and on. I talked to so many people after she moved out.
Yeah.
And I just, it was just like, you know, and then the landlord is like breathing down your neck.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, you need to tell me who's moving in. And like, you know, there was a lease to sign and like all this stuff. It was so stressful. And then at the last moment I ended up with like three people to choose from, but, you know, they all had their sort of like, who knows, or
right.
kind of, and I ended up with a roommate who was just great. And,
oh, nice.
So I was really, I felt really lucky that I got to live there 4 years with like, you know, better than average, I think.
Absolutely.
Roommates. So.
Do you remember like some of the worst candidates that you talked to?
You know, I can't say I had anyone that was just terrible.
That's good.
You know, and at least we never got to the stage of sitting down and having a conversation.
Yeah.
One of the guys who was kind of like in the last moment, you know, kind of there as like a possibility, was someone who had just, I think it was one of these situations where he had just come out of a long term relationship or something like that. And, I can't remember exactly what it was that sort of, I felt like, I don't know if I could really do this, you know, like I was trying to imagine my life sharing a space with this person. And he didn't seem like a terrible person at all, but it was just kind of one of those, like, I don't know. And, like that could be really awkward and mostly what was frustrating about it was not that the people were so, you know, wacky,
yeah.
but it was just like feeling like I kept going down this path of like, okay, great, you want to move in, and then like people would sort of flake out. There was one woman I talked to for I think over an hour, you know, just like trying to get to know like, okay, how would this person be to live with, and then at the end of the conversation I was like, okay, so just to go over some of the details, like the move-in would be, you know, the lease starts October 1st. And she's like, oh, October 1st? Because I'm looking for something for, like, right now, like September. And I was just like, didn't you read the posting? Like, like that was an hour of my time, but it was a good learning experience.
Yeah, front load that
now,
crucial info.
Then everyone else, I was just like, so the move-in date is October 1st. Is that okay with you? Okay, now let's talk.
That seems to be, I mean, we were having a conversation too, like a trope in your life, like you spending all this like quality conversation time with people for naught.
Yeah.
God, this is great. I'm really excited. So, what I can't get out of my head is sort of your escape from Philly to go to Mexico. Like, what happened? Like, how did that happen?
The short answer is just that I felt like I needed a change.
Okay.
But
what does that look like? Like, what is, you know, Yeah, I want the long answer.
The long answer is that I, like in 2006, I was in a very, like I was in a short relationship with my housemate at the time, one of my housemates at the time. And knowing, like we got into the relationship knowing that he was going to be leaving at the end of the summer. And so that's what made it a short relationship. But after he left, it wasn't even the fact that it was short. It was just, I had like all of this really intense anxiety that came up for me during that relationship. Like the kind of thing that just like, when you have, I don't know if you've had this experience, but having like an emotional response to something that you're just like, where is this coming from? Like, like, what is this? And I kind of like this thing that I didn't see it coming and I didn't know what it was and I didn't really know how to deal with it. And, like, if, for example, I would have these moments, these times in, when he was still around, you know, when he was around and we were going out, that I had this feeling of like an abyss that was just like the bottom just totally like falling out from under me. I can't even really explain it now because I think I'm far enough, or I've been enough away from that feeling and that experience to not quite have the like sense of it anymore. But I just remember that was the sort of name. That's kind of how I tagged it, as like what this feeling was, and that it was completely destabilizing and scary and upsetting. And
and for you, it was connected to this relationship.
It came up in the context of the relationship. Huh. So some of the fallout of that was like, after he left, I was still dealing with a lot of anxiety, and then just also like confusion about the, you know, like my relationship, my, how to relate to him or my relationship with him. And that was, that went on for like a year or more, but it kind of morphed into, I think, just like a general kind of depression that I was experiencing. Yeah. And that's part of what fed into, I just feeling like I wanted a change or needed a change. And it was linked to me in my mind, like with being in Philly. And I mean, when I look back on that time now, I honestly can't even say that sometimes you get perspective from like looking back on times past, like talking to you right now and thinking about it, I'm like, I don't know what the hell was going on with me at that time. Yeah. You know, it in retrospect, it feels like just this messy emotional time that I don't really understand how something just cracked open and I like didn't know what to do with it. But part of what it ended up making me feel like is I just needed to get out of here.
Yeah.
And simultaneously, like on a less like, in a less extreme way, I was feeling like my work, I felt like I kept taking these jobs that I was like, I'm, you know, that's a good job. You know, like people can respect me and I can respect myself in that job. Like it's something that I can do. That's kind of like good for the world or something. Yeah. And that I'm very capable of, like at the time I left, I was working part-time for the ACLU as a community organizer. Yeah. You know, like no shame in that.
No,
right.
And no.
At least not to me.
I think that's, that's what you told me you did when we met. That's what you were doing.
I had been, so what, that was before I went away. When I came back, I did some other work. But yeah, and I was good at like doing the kind of organizing stuff, at least the stuff that I needed to be doing at that job.
Yeah.
But I'd had a lot of jobs like that where I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do, but I just kind of took jobs that were like, yeah, this sounds like good, something that I can do, that I'm very capable of at. And I just was sort of like a little frustrated with that situation, just feeling kind of like half in, half out of the jobs I was in terms of my commitment or why I was actually there. And I ended up having all these desk jobs, like just a series of, even the organizing stuff. Sounds like it could be very, you know, out and about, but it wasn't. It was more like sitting at a desk most of the time. And I just, when I, at this period in my life where I was like, so just emotionally, I don't know, like kind of depressed and sort of like, all of these things, I just started asking myself, like, what is it that makes me happy? Like, what can I name that I can honestly, like, truthfully know, like, it, when I think about it for myself, that this is something that makes me happy. And I didn't have a, you know, like, you, I think if
I want to,
like,
know the answer,
like,
so
even
bad.
Even now, if I ask myself that question, I think there's a lot of things that I could say, kind of give me pleasure, or that I think should make me happy, or something like that. But when you think about it, like, do those things really make you happy? Like, what makes you feel?
Oh gosh,
what happy?
What are some of the, I mean, what are some of the, like, if, you know, what are these things now, like, today?
Well, like, one of the things then what that I thought of was sunshine. I was like, it's hard not to be happy about sunshine. I mean, it feels so good, you know, like, what are the things that feel good? Like, sunshine and being outside, those were two of the things that I was like, I can get behind those things, you know, like, with, I can be pretty unequivocal about my feelings about, like, getting outside, using my body, and, like, being in the sun. So it was pretty basic. I was just like, I think I got to do that.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, that's not that bad. I mean, I feel like it's really hard. I like thinking for myself, like, to be able to boil it down to that sort of basic or simple of a thing is really important. And I think challenging. I mean, you have to be in a pretty serious spot to be like to strip it all away and to, like, because that just sort of sounds like a, to be your best, like, biological self, to be your best human, like, you would need to be charged by the sun and moving around.
Yeah. Well, I think I was in a place, and this isn't, maybe not new, and I don't think it's like, I think I've experienced the same question since then, but at that time I was, like, really in this place of thinking about, like, almost not being sure if I was capable of feeling, like, feeling those kinds of feelings of, like, happiness and like, love and, possibility and stuff like that. Like, I was kind of doubting it, whether I had the capacity for that. And so I was trying to really, like, think about what are, that there must be things that, you know, give me some of those feelings. Like, what are those things? And, just trying to, anything I could think of that, like, gave me even, like, a little bit of that feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those were the things. And then I was like, well, if, I don't know how the Mexico thing came up, except that I started thinking that as far as getting, using my body more, I probably needed to look for a different line of work, and maybe be more intentional about it. So I started thinking about teaching. I had a degree in adult education, but it was a basically like an academic degree, like a research-based degree.
Right.
And I was like, well, maybe I want to teach, but I don't want to go back and get another degree. I mean, who wants to get two master's degrees or whatever, even though I did later. But
and thank God you did.
But I was like, well, what about teaching ESL? Like, you can get a certificate to do that. And then I could get a certificate and, like, maybe find a job teaching. And that would be one way not to be doing a desk job. And I looked around for options and I thought, well, I guess I wanted to learn, like, work on learning Spanish too. So I was like, I'll take some time. I'll go somewhere I can learn Spanish and, you know, maybe I can do an ESL certification while I'm at it. So I was thinking Guatemala, but then I found this place in Oaxaca in Mexico that, the School for International Training, in Vermont, they offer their certificate program through, like, instructors who work in other locations.
I studied abroad through SIT.
There you go.
I went to Toulouse, France.
Toulouse.
Yeah.
Très bien.
Yeah, oui.
So, yeah, so they had
you speak French, too?
Yeah.
And Spanish?
I speak, like, a little of both. Yeah.
Oh.
But I was so, they had a program there, that an instructor who was going to be teaching there like in February for a 5-week course, January, February, something like that. So I went, that's what I decided to do, was go and do that. And then study Spanish.
And then you worked on a farm afterwards?
Yeah. So before I left, I was also thinking about the whole getting outside using my body thing. Yeah. So I was like, well, maybe I'll work on a farm for a while. So I did some research. I really did do some research. Like I went to, I think I visited Seattle that summer or fall, and I had researched some farms in the area that I thought I might be interested in. And I did like a little like drive around with my friend, like visited some of them just to kind of check out like, would I want to spend time here?
Yeah.
And I had also checked out some farms around here, that I thought might be interesting. But I went to this farm, I visited this farm and on Whidbey Island, which was, you know, when I thought about working on a farm and I was like, where would I want to work? Like Whidbey Island is one of the most beautiful places. It's north of Seattle. Like, you know, Pacific Northwest, like beautiful views of the mountains, and just like it's so idyllic in a certain way, and especially summertime because that's the time to be out there, you know. So I went and visited this farm that was on Whidbey, that was run by, it's like basically like 1 to 2 acres under cultivation, very small, like organic vegetable farm. No, you know, they had chickens and stuff, but they didn't have any like large animals.
Yeah.
And it was run by two women, a couple. They seemed really great. And, they had this space where they could put up an intern, you know, like in their barn. And I was just like, oh, this seems amazing, you know? So I said, I'm interested, but like, I'll be in touch about as my plans unfold. So when I went to Mexico, I already knew that like this was an option for later. I just hadn't really committed myself because I wanted to see sort of how things would go. And then I ended up coming back from Mexico, like in the middle of the spring or something. I kind of swung through Philly for a little bit. I contacted them, and they had actually found another intern, but they were like, yeah, sure, come out, we'll figure something out. And they got a trailer that I stayed in for the summer. And I'm like out on the farm. So
how did you make that trailer your home? Like, did you decorate it at all? Or
that trailer was great. It was like a definite sort of like cozy just by the nature of it. It's so small and like
Whidbey Island. Mm-hmm. Whidbey Island.
Yeah.
Okay.
And interesting thing about that trailer was that, yeah, I mean, I didn't do much to make it home. I put whatever stuff I had in there, but, it just was like, you know, there's like a couch that becomes your bed and like, and then there were flowers on the farm. So every so often, and we could kind of go and like cut flowers if we wanted. So every so often I'd make myself a little bouquet, and that was nice. But my brother came, my parents and my brother came to visit me when I was out there. And, so my brother stayed on the farm with me one or two nights that they were there. He didn't actually stay in the trailer, but you know, we hung out in the trailer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We like composed a song in the trailer.
Oh. Do you remember the song?
What song was it? I think it was actually like the first song that we ever made together. We haven't done a lot, but we've made a few songs, like created a few songs together. And he must have just been learning the guitar and kind of like getting that going. And it was a song about, it was called John Deere, I think. It was about our lives growing up in the suburbs of Houston. And we lived on an acre and a half in this suburb that was mostly grass, like our lawn, like the property was mostly lawn.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent what feels like a good amount of our like youth weekend time on this like rider mower mowing the lawn. And it was just, you know, in retrospect, like this ridiculous waste of time of just like, of all the ways you could spend your time, like why? So
why ride a John Deere mower on your acre and a half of lawn? You don't remember the tune or any of it.
There was this line that was like, I'm jumping the curb and leaving the burbs, John Deere. I don't remember the tune exactly.
But, so it's like getting out. It's like a song about
leaving. Yeah,
your
I think
John
the rhyme with John Deere was like basically something like I'm getting out of here,
yeah.
You know, or something. So anyway, but my brother, we made this song when he was there, and so my brother, one of his current claims to fame is that he started this tiny home community in DC. He bought an alley lot in DC, and he has a builder and an architect that he worked with, but he also did a lot of design work himself on kind of creating this tiny home.
Oh.
And you know, I think one of his inspirations was coming and staying in that trailer. I think he was kind of like, oh yeah, like small living, you know? And,
oh, that's amazing.
So, you know, if nothing else, I feel like it was one of the sparks for something he's done that's been really cool,
yeah.
And just like very inspiring.
I see a video? Does he have like a documentary online about tiny homes? Or
he doesn't. He's gotten a lot of press, but he hasn't done a lot of like video
okay.
stuff. The one thing,
a different guy.
There was a reality series or something that was about tiny homes where people were. Like, it was kind of like a thing where, you know, like they'd have a tiny home built for them mm-hmm. as part of the show. And
okay.
and the model of his home, like, that was one of the models that was built on the show. So so it wasn't his house, but it was like his house.
Yeah.
But the replicated.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he's had some, like, articles and stuff in various publications and. They have these like open house things on the lot where anyone can come and just like check out the houses and stuff. And they have them every like 6 to 8 weeks and they get like 200 people like on a regular basis to come and look at that, come and like want to see these places. It's amazing. I mean, can you imagine like as a theater artist, like,
yeah.
trying to get 200 people to turn out to anything.
It's amazing. Yeah. That's unheard of. Unheard of. Oh, God, that's a great, actually, segue. So, Jess, we met in Applied Theater grad school.
Right? Yep.
And do you identify as a theater artist? Or what is your artistic identity?
Wow.
Speaking of my personal anxiety, like, this is where mine is.
Do you
is
have
rooted.
An anxiety about?
I have an anxiety about
your
my artistic identity very much.
But you feel you have an artistic identity.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think I do. I have a practice, like, I have a yearning. But I think I am very afraid to, like, commit to that identity. I have a lot of stress about it. I have a lot of stress about committing to the identity of a comedian. And I don't know, I guess like just sort of going back to like thinking about my own anxieties about relationships too. Like it's like the things that give me most anxiety are like my artistic identity and like how to be a good friend. And like if I'm being a good friend. And these are the things that like, those are the things that like, where when I'm thinking about them, I see the abyss in front of me, right? And I think sort of part of the impetus of this podcast too, and like why I'm looking or like why I want to go into people's cozy zones and like bask in my own cozy zone is like it's a place where I can work through, I think, some of this creative anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I was particularly interested in like talking to you and like working through the idea of like physical theater and physical performance. And I don't know. I don't know. We did a little bit of devising. We had a few classes together.
Yeah.
Maybe group theater session.
Yeah. Although I don't think we did any projects together.
No,
did
I don't
we?
Think so. I don't think
Too
so.
Bad.
Devising for fun. We did like there was a few things.
Yeah, and the improv stuff.
And the improv stuff, right? Little clandestine improv sessions.
Right.
But I don't know, like I find you very humorous. Like I've always like found you very funny and you make me laugh and like you're much taller than I am.
Does that help?
It does help. and like, you know, I don't know, you're long of limb.
I know.
You know, slender of torso. I don't know. You know, just to help, you know, this is a podcast, so people aren't necessarily going to see you. So
right. So you need to just, you need to.
Yeah. You can also, if you want to describe my physicality, now is the time.
You're not going to have a picture of yourself?
I probably will, but just, you know, just so.
I would say you're, I don't know. I have a hard time describing people. You're,
Yeah, get it.
You're slender. Mm-hmm. You've got a sort of like wry humor sort of vibe about you.
Okay.
You're gonna just like take it all in. I don't physicality, I don't know. You're kinda like average height, dark hair. yeah. I mean like fit but not too fit.
Great.
You know, not like popping out of your shirt kind of fit.
Oh boy.
Does that work?
That's great.
Okay.
It's amazing how like uncomfortable that made me. Like, was it uncomfortable when I said you were long of limb and slender of torso?
Well, only because like I have 38 years of like associations with those things, so I have this kind of like feeling. I have feelings attached to that stuff. Like my picture when you said that in my mind was like, oh yeah, I'm funny because like my limbs are weirdly long, and like when I move, even though in my mind I'm moving gracefully, I actually like. Look kind of funny and awkward.
No, but you certainly, you do.
But that adds
move,
to the humor.
You do move gracefully. You do. You
but
are.
I think in like a theater context, like physical theater and stuff too, it's like I think of when I'm moving, if like part of what can add to the humor of that is can sometimes. Well, let me give an example. Like there was a guy in this physical theater workshop that I just did who similar build to me.
Give us a brief. So what physical theater workshop?
This was with
you?
Pig Iron. Yeah. They're a physical theater company based in Philly.
Yes.
And they do a bit of devised, like some of their work is devised work, like ensemble based devised theater, although they do other things too. And, the best, description that I thought came out of that of physical theater, because I keep trying to describe it to people, like my parents, you know,
sure.
like I'm doing this physical theater workshop, they're like, physical theater, like what, I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Is like that the creation comes less from like this, I think the starting point for creation is less from the head and more from the body.
Yes.
So it's like finding the physical ways into the creation of theatrical work.
Yes.
So you're not starting with text necessarily, and you're not starting with like, oh, let's try this idea. You're like, okay, let's look at this picture of a, you know, of a broken down old house and now be the house.
Oh God.
You know,
yeah.
Like how does the house breathe?
Mm.
How does the house talk?
Mm-hmm.
How does the house move?
Mm.
You know, so it's, and then suddenly you've got a character, and that can spark all kinds of other things.
I think that's so beautiful and nice.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I've been really inspired by that kind of work because it just ends you up in places that you wouldn't expect to go. Whereas I think, yeah, maybe that's the thing about my like draw to that kind of theater and just the draw to trying to explore more aspects of like how we get into our bodies more than just into our minds is that I kind of have this feeling like if I'm in my mind, I know where I'm going to go, you know? And like, I think I have a trust building, some trust building work to do with my mind, you know,
and yeah.
like for the rest of my life, just to sort of build the trust that my mind can take me to interesting places. Cause I know that it can,
of course,
but there's something right. Like I think in more recent years where maybe I feel like my mind kind of dumps me back in the same places that I'm familiar with that kind of don't serve me very well. Like it kind of goes in these like patterns of thought that have become kind of entrenched and make it difficult for me actually to kind of be creative. In fact, even the concept of being creative is like stressful, right?
Sure.
It's like, oh my God, now I have to be original.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you just kind of, some of these techniques or some of these approaches to being in your body and starting from that place feel like I don't have to think about it.
Yes.
I'm just going to try to do it. And then suddenly you like all kind of like interesting things emerge from that, you know, and,
because you're a very intellectual person, I would say, as am I. And I also have, I mean, I feel very close to what you're talking about. Like my mind can be an enemy,
exactly,
you know, and
yeah.
I'm just sort of constantly thinking about things, worrying about things. Yeah. And I think what you're sort of suggesting is that if you trust your body, if you sort of, I don't know, let the impulse begin there, your mind can be released and you can be free to truly make something and find joy in making something.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is really important. And thinking about Fun-A-Day also, you know, so I think it was started in Philly, this concept of Fun-A-Day.
That may be true. Yeah.
I mean, think so.
It's been going on here for a long time.
And
like here.
Yeah. In this studio.
That's
amazing. Yeah. So perhaps as long as the studio has been open.
I think so. Yeah.
And it also has migrated to New York. Your Fun-A-Day month is in January and ours is in February. And just to put context to it, the concept is that you do one fun thing each day, presumably a creative thing, and you document it. And then at the end of the month, you have an exhibition of all of your fun things. And I think the magic of it is that if you do a little thing each day, but you do it every day, you have this amazing exhibition-worthy body of work. And it's all like, you know, coming here last night and seeing the different things, you know, fruits and vegetables from different letters of the alphabet. A guy was learning Photoshop, these party hats. I think one of my favorite things was this person named Wordy Girl created these comics from just random like children's stickers.
Yes.
And they were so funny, and I loved them, and just was standing next to a guy just laughing out loud, like full belly laughs from all these things, you know, Winnie the Pooh stickers being very rude to each other, and these these toucans in a dysfunctional relationship, and it was beautiful. yeah, and I just, I don't know, all of it was so impressive. These photorealistic paintings on wood of authors.
Yeah,
20th century authors that were very inexpensive for like the quality of what they were. They were selling for $50 each, these unbelievable, perhaps oil or acrylic paintings.
Yeah.
But so I think, and so I am the master of like starting projects, like having huge ideas about starting projects and then not finishing them. So I have started a Fun-A-Day, and I am striving to identify as a stand-up comedian, perhaps as a prop comedian, like, and seeing what that identity does for myself. And so I've been like doing like little 5-minute stand-up sets by myself.
Awesome.
And I've done 3 of them, and I've missed a few days and so I got to catch up, but don't tell anybody.
Okay.
And the first 2 I did were just horrendous. It was unbelievable. It was just me, and I bombed in front of myself. And I don't know. I was wearing headphones. That might be a problem. And the 3rd time I did it, it went better, and I wasn't wearing headphones, and like I actually enjoyed what I was doing. But I think, I don't know why it's so hard to find joy in like the creative process or in something that like I know I want to spend my time doing, that I would love to dedicate my life to. I don't know if it's the fear of failure or what it is, but like perhaps the answer lies in the body and in like allowing impulses to start from your physical self as opposed to your intellectual self. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's, I think as a more like mind centered person, there's some level of, you know, I don't know. I'm curious about if this is part of your experience growing up, because you said you identified yourself as being more of like an intellectual.
Yeah.
But I think for me, that was a huge part of my identity as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, that's how I got a lot of like affirmation from my family.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got a lot of affirmation at school. I wasn't particularly like a social superstar in terms, like I wasn't a popular kid or anything. Like the way I felt that I was okay, or, you know, like the niche that I found in places was around in school and stuff was around, just being able to like do it and do it well, like do the academic stuff well. Which was like a little, like a really mixed blessing, because, I think I that was, you know, there was a lot of creativity in that, in some of the classes and things that I did, especially when I was younger. But then it ended up being a lot of striving to meet other people's expectations, because that's how school is set up.
Yeah.
And then that's a real setup for disaster from, I think, from an artistic standpoint, because, you know, I mean, as a stand-up comedian, like you need to please your audience,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And as an artist, as a performing artist, you need to please your audience.
Yeah.
But in terms of creating work, like, I think it's a pretty horrible standard to go by. Like, you can't start creating work thinking about what other people are going to think of it. Or
you have to please yourself.
That can't be the only thing, right?
No. I mean, it has to be an internal thing, I think. And then hopefully, you know, an audience will appreciate it because they'll derive pleasure in it too. They see you being pleased.
Right. I think so. But that is the thing that I've struggled with a lot, is what is the intern, like what pleases me internally?
Yeah.
I mean, it comes back to that whole idea of sunshine.
Sunshine. What makes you happy?
I mean, sometimes that kind of feels like, okay, I can always come back to that. But, you know, yeah, in terms of creating stuff, I completely agree with you. When you're sort of when I think about spending free time, and I could spend all this time that I spend doing other things, you know, potentially making stuff.
Yeah.
But there's some kind of, I feel like maybe it's like I don't want to let myself down or something.
Yeah.
And
yes.
Like if I start something and don't finish it, or if I start something and I don't like it.
Yes.
And I think that's a big enough barrier that a lot of times I just don't
do it. So the question is, how do we protect ourselves from ourselves in that way? Like, I mean,
because when you do it, you often really like it.
Yeah,
right?
Like going to yoga, like taking a jog.
But
like
you
kind of
have
things.
To force yourself
like
into
overcoming
it.
The inertia of it. And like being okay with failure, and it probably just takes a lot of practice.
Yeah.
I'm really, do you remember some of your favorite moments from the physical theater training, the pig iron training?
I liked a lot of the techniques that we were working with.
Yeah.
You know, those moments where you have, like where you're improvising something and you just are going with it and it turns into something really interesting or cool and you can feel it happening in the moment.
Totally.
That there's a sort of synergy, especially when someone else is involved, but sometimes it's just you, you know? And I had a number of moments like that. We did a lot of these kind of open canvas things where you're just, you have a theme, but basically you just, it's open improv. You just come on to the quote unquote stage mm-hmm. and you do something mm-hmm. and other people can join you or not join you or, you know, and then you leave when you leave and, it's all to explore a theme. And sometimes the director would be like, okay, everybody off except blah, 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 mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. everybody off. And so he would kind of manage it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so stuff would, you're not planning it at all. You're not talking about it at all. And then sometimes just like really beautiful moments would emerge of people just playing with an idea or something.
Like, do you remember like a particular theme or moment?
I wasn't even in this, but there was like a little piece of tinsel that was on the floor that somebody like picked up and started doing this thing with where it was like a little thing that you could, this little shimmery silver piece of tinsel that, you know, she was like blowing and keeping up in the air by blowing on it. And a bunch of people came in and were like playing together with keeping this piece of tinsel like up in the air. And it just became this kind of game, but it was something very captivating to watch for some reason. So, you know, just something like that.
Nice.
That just turns into something kind of interesting. And then the other thing that I really enjoyed was we had a one of the approaches that we worked with was listening to a piece of music and listening for all the little like rhythms and sounds and you know, instruments and things like that in the music, and then creating a piece of like a short scene in time with the music, like a one they were referring to as like 1-to-1. Basically, you're like moving with you know you try to sort of match up the rhythm of your movements with some rhythms in the music. Of course, there might be multiple rhythms going on at the same time or sort of strands, so just trying to pick up on some of those and amplify them through your movements. And so we had, there was kind of this like very high energy like French song that that they gave us as an example, and we listened to it, we sort of talked about what images came to our minds and listening to it, then we just sort of got up and like moved around to the music and reflected on, well, how is it different to move to it versus to listen to it? Do you have any different impressions? And then we were asked to get into groups and like make something to fit to the music. And they played it for us, maybe for the song to us, maybe like 4 times with some time in between for us to just kind of like talk and figure out what we were going to add or change or do differently. And the group I was in, one of the women was like, I don't know, I had this vision of like, you know, a sort of like man about town sort of thing where he's like going and like having sex with all these different women or something or trying to or whatever, like kind of a Don Juan scenario. So we had, you know, it was like 3 of us who were kind of like in our imaginary like little separate apartments, and this person is going like door to door and having different encounters with these women, you know, each of which are sort of flawed in their various ways, you know, like the one who's just like very sexy, but she's a very like push pull kind of person.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you want to touch her, but she won't really let you kind of thing. And then the one who accidentally like chokes him on her cooking, you know, she's trying to like romance him and she just overfeeds him. And then the one who's like whipping him, and he didn't bargain for that. So,
who are you?
The overfeeding.
Nice.
Yeah. Like popping truffles into his mouth. And it was just so fun to play with that. And it was a good group, you know, the group makes a difference too. So their energy about it was much more playful and less like intense of like, let's do it like this, you know. Or so.
That's wonderful. I mean, that's a huge concept of like play and giving yourself permission to play, as opposed to like being very serious and like, because art can be very serious, but that isn't very fun,
right,
when it's serious. And like the playful element is, I don't know, that I feel like that is, that maybe begins to answer like, how do you how do you relax? How do you like allow yourself to fail? Like there's not a lot of failure in play, you know, like
yeah.
it's really hard. It's sort of all necessary and all part of it or just a slightly different direction.
Yeah.
So that is actually really helpful and relaxing to think about. You were talking about a guy in your class too, who was similar build to you.
Yeah, and I just was thinking because you were talking about physicality and like our impressions of talking about our own bodies or other people's bodies. Like when I'd see him perform, I often have this, even like on the subway and stuff, I'll have this thought. Sometimes I'll see people and I'll be like, I look like her. Like what I look like to other people is what that person looks like to me. And I have this moment of kind of reflection on that of like, oh, wow. You know, I mean, that may or may not be true, but that's just my perception.
Yeah.
Of like, wow, that person was amazingly tall. Wow. I look like that to other people. Or, that person's all like arms and legs. Oh, that's what I look like to other people. And sometimes it's an unpleasant kind of association. Yeah. And with this guy, I was just thinking a lot about how his physicality really informed, like his body really informed how I was perceiving him in character and stuff like that, you know, just because of sort of the way he moved and the fact that he was thin and tall and long limbed. And I don't know, in some ways I feel very like I want to not think about those things when I'm performing in front of people, because I find it to be, I mean, it's definitely makes me self-conscious and that makes me feel limited in what I can express. But then, you know, you're always going to be read for your exterior.
That is the negotiation. Like I feel like I don't have a very good sense of how I come across to other people. Like I feel very medium, you know, like as you were describing me earlier, like, you know, there's a lot of, yeah, he's like, yeah, you know, medium,
average,
medium height, you know, like pretty fit, dark hair, but you know, like pretty medium. And like, that's like, I don't know, you know, there seems to be like, at least in stand up, a lot of comics will, you know, call out like what they look like, if they're fat, if they, you know, look like a certain celebrity, you know, and I don't necessarily know like what I would say, like a small or a medium Adrian Brody. I don't know.
Like, maybe you should just go with the like medium, like yeah, play
I
mean, up
I,
the.
I think that's it. Yeah.
It's just
medium.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's all I got. I think that's what I have. Right. But I think it is important to at least be aware of how you are read, as you're saying, you know.
Well, I think you can use it to your advantage.
Certainly.
Right?
Yeah.
But I think I have a real tension with that, because yeah. I think that's true, and I kind of want to, like, not think about it too
right.
much, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I have an idea of myself in my mind of kind of, like, how I move and what I look like, or maybe it's a little more aspirational, like what I want to look like, mm-hmm. that I feel like is what I bring to when I'm, you know, in front of people,
yeah.
Or try to. If I start thinking about myself as being like all like leggy and all that stuff and just kind of like, wow, this stork on stage or something, then I'm not really in.
Sure.
Thing. So there's a part of me that I thinks of myself as more like petite than I am, more kind of like cute in a more petite sort of way. Like I try to make myself small in certain ways.
Yeah.
Like the fact that like I kind of like pull my body in,
yeah.
you know, and stuff like, then I feel like, oh, I'm very compact really.
Yeah.
You know, but
I mean, you have a range, you know, like, yeah, you seem very compact now. We're all sort of curled up on this couch, you know, you know, but at some point, I think toward the end of our conversation, we're probably going to stand up and like do something.
Are we?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. But not yet. I don't know.
Okay.
You let me know when it feels right. And we still have these clementines.
It's hard to eat the clementines when you're holding a microphone.
That's true. I was trying to.
We could try to do a collaborative opening of the Clementine.
Do you want a Clementine now? Or?
Well, I could. I mean, I could eat a Clementine now.
Yeah, all right. Let's see how
I mean, I have nails. That'll help.
I have some nails.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah. Here, I usually start with this, like, the little divot on the top.
Great.
Because it kind of gives you a natural hold.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that kind of works. This I like how you're moving it. You move it, and I, like, pull the skin off of it.
Yeah, so I'm holding the Clementine. Are you going to do do you make elephants out of your Clementines ever? We sort of broke it. We can't really make it.
I don't know how to make an elephant.
So, like what you did, but so now we're making the ears.
Okay. But am I going to pull, I'm going to pull the ear off.
Yeah, and when.
Should I not do that?
You can.
Oh my gosh, I see what you mean though. Like what you just
and
leave
And so,
it?
So you, so we have the long piece here, and so then, or here, in yours, so it's in your perspective, and now we have a little elephant.
Oh my gosh, no, I never done, that was just an accident.
Yeah, you can, it is possible to do that in one piece, if you'd like.
Really?
Yeah.
Here, wait, now you have to pull off your part of it.
Right, so we're going to eat half of this Clementine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. They're very good. Are these from the co-op?
They are.
That's a good segue. So, traditionally, or at least in the podcast I listen to, there's always some sort of, you know, the guest is plugging something. And I think this is a good opportunity. Jess, do you have anything to plug?
You mean like an event or a place or a what?
Or, yeah, or a business, a consulting business. You don't have to, but.
Well, we were talking before about my consulting business that I just started.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I need to plug it. I think it's just, but it's like a cool thing that I'm doing.
It is a cool thing you're doing.
I'm enjoying like exploring being a businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
So the Blue Door Group is the business, education and training consulting.
And on the internet, where can we find them?
We can find them at www.thebluedoorgroup.net.
Net. Very good.
Net, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, we went back and forth about the org.com. Net thing. I think com was taken actually, so we were like org or net. And
interesting. What? Yeah. Why net?
I think org sounded kind of like nonprofit,
right? And you're certainly
we're not nonprofit, and we came out of being volunteer run, like a volunteer run organization. Mm-hmm. So I think just to avoid the confusion too, because I think people might could potentially think of us being nonprofit, even though we're not. So.
Great. So .net.
.net.
Good.
The Blue Door Group.
The Blue Door Group.net. And what do you guys do?
Well, our main focus is doing participatory education and training, and meaning that we facilitate training and education. Educational workshops for other people. That's kind of like the consulting part of our work.
Mm-hmm.
And we also offer opportunities for people to learn how to do more interactive and participatory styles of education and training and organizing and facilitation, you know, just anywhere that you might use those kinds of skills. And then more broadly than that, beyond the education and training realm, with a focus on participation, we consult on participatory processes. So like processes for engaging people, whether that's in an organization or in a, like in the case of our current work, a strategic planning process or something like that.
For Mariposa Co-op.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're our current client. Yeah.
You took us to the co-op last night, which was really exciting, and it had a wonderful smell. And I just really, really was taken with sort of the beginning efforts. So you have these two notebooks for adults with markers and colored pencils where people can, what is the prompt exactly for their reaction?
The prompt is, my ideal Mariposa is,
yes,
my ideal Mariposa feels like, mm, and my ideal Mariposa offers.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot.
Nice. And, yeah, and then there are all of these, I mean, amazing bits of feedback that people have given, which is so amazing. Like, I don't know, I feel like I also try and create prompts to get people to react at my job in New York, and there's not a lot of feedback that happens. People don't necessarily go for it, but it what really struck me is that people were going for it.
Yeah.
And like really, and being real about it too. Like, you know, said some difficult things and had like brought up some really like serious issues about class and about, you know, belonging and inclusion and all of these things that really shocked me.
Yeah.
And I mean, I imagine that's going to set you up for some really interesting conversations in your strategic planning.
Yeah. Well, that's not surprising input. I mean,
yeah,
going into the process, I think,
yeah,
people already know that those are some of the issues.
Yeah, totally.
That they're dealing with. So, but it's actually a relief that in some ways to have that stuff come out in through these things that we've like set up.
Yeah.
Because it just affirms that like, yeah, this is, it's not just something that people inside the, you know, like in the staff or of the,
yeah,
leadership is thinking about. It's like really coming from things that people in the membership and the shoppers are thinking about. So.
Yeah. And something too that I wanted to ask you about is, I know, so after we're done here, you're going to go knocking on doors,
mm-hmm,
to ask people why they aren't members of the co-op.
More about why they're not shoppers.
Why they're not shoppers.
Yeah. Why they don't go to the co-op.
And so, With your permission, so I'm going to be someone behind a door. So will you sort of show me what that might look like, and I'll be a non-shopper.
Mm.
And you,
I'll try. I don't have the script with me, so I've got to kind of remember.
All right,
but it might be good practice.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. You'll see how it goes. All right. So I'm.
So it's like, knock knock.
Hello.
Hi. I live in the neighborhood, and I'm with Mariposa Co-op. It's a local food store. We're just doing a planning process, and we're trying to get input from people about what they think about the co-op or what they know about the co-op. We are giving away some gift cards for people who can take a few minutes to talk with us, just 5 or 10 minutes. And I was wondering if you would be willing to talk to me for 5 or 10 minutes just about your shopping experiences in the neighborhood.
Okay. What do you mean? What do you mean by planning? What's planning process?
Well, we're trying to plan for the future of Mariposa is a co-op food store. So we're at 4824 Baltimore Avenue.
Okay.
So just at, like between 48th and 49th on Baltimore, and
that's like right by my house.
Yeah, not too far. And we, you know, the co-op's about access to healthy food and local produce and sustainable products, and serving this neighborhood and the city of Philadelphia.
What is the gift card for?
It's like it's a $5 gift card for Mariposa.
Oh, okay.
Just to, if you want to shop there.
I guess my thought immediately is like, that probably won't get me too much, like food at Mariposa, like $5. I guess, I don't know. It always seems like it's a really expensive place.
Well, I was hoping to ask you if you're willing to just talk for a minute.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
What have you've heard of Mariposa?
Yeah. I walk by, you know, because it's right by my house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't know. It just sort of seems like it's too expensive, and it's not really the place I would. I go to the other food store nearby.
Yeah. Right.
What is that called again?
You go to Aldi's or Fresh Grocer.
Yeah. Aldi's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else do you know about the co-op? What have you heard, or what have you heard about it?
Started by hippies, mm-hmm, in like the 60s, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's about it. But you've been there. You have shopped there?
No, I've just walked by.
Okay.
And I've heard that it's expensive.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where do you shop? What are your
Aldi's and what's the other place?
Fresh Grocer.
Fresh Grocer.
Okay.
And I eat out a lot also. Oh,
okay.
Like a lot of takeout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you look for in like a
cheap,
grocery store?
Like I like cheap, you know, and I like sort of feeling like it's a place that I recognize. There's sort of a weird mm-hmm. smell coming out of the co-op.
Oh, okay.
That's like I don't know if it's like patchouli or what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, could you name it like an herb smell or
something?
Yeah,
weird, yeah, hippie smell.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. All right. And how does Aldi smell? Like, what's different about that?
It's like real, like meat.
Okay.
Like real meat, you know.
Mhm.
And like bleach, which makes me know that it's clean.
It's clean. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And is there anything in your experience shopping at Aldi's or Fresh Grocer that you would like to be different? Like some things that aren't working for you about those places when you shop there?
You know, I guess when I go, it's pretty crowded. And like the lines are long. So that's, you know, if I'm in a hurry, that's sort of pretty frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So this planning process that we're doing with, mm-hmm. with Mariposa, we're trying to think about how the co-op can best serve this neighborhood. It's a very neighborhood based place,
okay.
store. And I'm just wondering if there's any thoughts you have about that, about how could the co-op serve you or serve this neighborhood in some way, like anything you're looking for or wish that the neighborhood had or offered that would be helpful to you.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you could do this at a food store, but like, you know, I'm interested in, like, you know, for example, my son just, you know, got on the honor roll
mm-hmm.
at school, and I'm really proud of him, and you know, I put up his little, you know, banner on our refrigerator, but you know, I kind of want people to know about that, you know, I want to celebrate my son. I want to know, you know, how other people are doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm certainly, you know, it's, you know, everyone has a right to a private life, but you know, there's some things that you'd like to celebrate. And like, you know, everyone goes to a food store, maybe not at, you know, I don't go to the co-op, but like a lot of people do. And so it would be nice to have, you know, like a faces of the community maybe, or a place to like mm-hmm. say, hey, like this cool thing happened, or this person won an award, or this person's, you know, going off on a cool trip somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, and I know Cedar Park Neighbors has a kind of scholarship program that they have for young people in the neighborhood who are going off, and that was so great to see that. So that's a really great idea.
Like, oh, thanks. Yeah.
Do
I get another gift card for that good idea?
I wish we could do that.
Oh, yeah. So, no.
Well, okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Have a good Sunday. Stay warm out there.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. That'll be good, Jess.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just getting me, like, prepped.
Yeah.
For it.
And I was just curious, like, what it's going to look like. I feel like, I don't know. Are people, have you done any door knocking?
I try to avoid it.
Yeah.
But I have done some, yeah. Like for get out the vote stuff.
Sure.
And my my friend and colleague who's going with me, she's done a lot more than I have.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping she's going to take on the bulk of the talking and I'm going to do the bulk of the note taking. But
yeah,
we'll see how it goes. I feel like I've got to pull my weight. So
yeah, you probably will switch off at some point.
Yeah. I mean, I need to push my edge, you know.
Yeah.
That's part of what it's about.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally.
So
there were some Jehovah's Witnesses who knocked on my door. I guess that's sort of the thing that I associate most with people knocking on doors, is sort of looking for either like a power, like a utility scam that happened to me in New York.
I had one of those
too.
Yeah.
And like some sort of proselytizing.
Yeah.
But I mean, it is a really lovely, your mission is like really lovely and generous. It's not, you know, $5 gift card is so that's so nice.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, something. It's better
and
than nothing.
It's a great way to get people in who may not have been in before. Like, that's pretty cool. Like, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, part of our, part of what I keep trying to remind myself with this whole thing is that the process is the product. Like, we're, the way we do the way we do all of these things, like trying to gather information from people and so on, is in some way trying to reflect the things we want to see in the co-op. Like, the co-op wants to be more inclusive. So that's one thing, right?
You know? Yeah.
So how do you do that through the strategic planning process? How do you like make it more inclusive?
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens, but
I'm curious about, how do you negotiate sort of the different aspects of your self? And what I mean by that is, so we're, you know, we're talking about physical theater, we're talking about creation, we're talking about being a theater artist, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about making art. And then, you know, there are also our careers, right? We both have careers that are different from like making art, right?
Yeah, I mean, because you're in the theater world in your career,
I am,
right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel like a art making role.
No, and there are certainly aspects of it, right? There are certainly art making aspects, but it's primarily administrative. You know, I would identify with my job as an administrator. You know, I fill out a lot of paperwork. There are a lot of systems I have to contend with. I do have to make things, but it's also very structured, you know, making like lobby displays for the shows that come up, and things like that. But, you know, there's a lot of approval. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of constraints, which is, you know, it's still creative, but it is for the company, right? It's not for my own edification. It's not for the audience of me. It's for the audience of the theater at large, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm constantly working to negotiate all of these different aspects. Like, I want my creative practice to feed into my career practice or my work practice or my office practice somehow. And I feel like I'm very actively searching how to do that. Do you feel like you can integrate those different aspects of yourself? How do you do it?
It's hard. I mean, I'd love to hear your experiences, you know, moving forward about how you found successes doing that.
Yeah.
'Cause it feels like a little bit of two different worlds for me, or more than two sometimes.
Yeah.
But especially because I have this feeling like I'll do things like this every so often, like a workshop or something.
Yeah.
And I feel like I fit there, you know. I feel like I've done it enough now. I've got those kinds of things enough that I've gotten to a point where I don't feel like an outsider in those spaces. Mm. I feel like, yeah, I can roll with, you know, like, okay, you want me to create a piece of something to music? Like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know? But on the other hand, I'm not doing that kind of work on a regular basis in my life, and I don't perform much ever.
Yeah.
I do a lot of workshops.
Yeah. Do you want to perform more?
I don't know. I mean, I think I have a real, like, I feel kind of torn about performance in a way. The process to me is so interesting. And of course, you know what, something that motivates the process is performance. You know, there's kind of that, it kind of gives a spur to creation,
the reward maybe, or at least the deadline, you know.
But performance is such a different experience than creating something.
And
the other thing about performance, and I kind of had this realization in the applied theater program, was, you know, like, it's one thing when you create something new and you perform it and it's kind of exciting because it's like the first time you're performing it, maybe the second time or something. But then I really don't totally understand how people who are actors do these runs of shows and perform the same thing, like, night after night after night.
Totally.
Like, that to me sounds like it would be so boring.
Totally.
And I think I'd feel the same way about something I created that I performed night after night after night. Yeah. If it were, you know, a devised thing or something. Like the thing I was telling you about with the French song and the Don Juan thing.
Yeah.
It's like, that was super fun to create. It was super fun to perform once. I would perform it again for sure.
Yeah.
If I had to perform it like every single day for 2 months or something, like I would be tired of it.
Of course.
Know?
Yeah.
And then it's a different thing than like, then it's not the creation process anymore. It's something else, right? Mm. It's the performance process, which is about fine tuning something for an audience. It's about how to keep something alive in the replication, like keeping it having that vitality and replicating something so that it looks fresh.
Yeah.
That's a different thing than like creating something new.
Absolutely. I mean, I dream about about having the opportunity to do something over and over and over again. And like, I feel like that sort of boredom is something I am striving for, but I know today I completely empathize with that. And I think that's part of like some of the joy about improv, because it just happens once you create it like in the moment, and uh-huh. then it's gone and you never have to deal with it again.
Yeah.
So if it's amazing, it's a great memory. And if it's crappy, it's fine. It's gone. It's this ephemeral moment.
Can you say more about you, like you're dreaming of the time when you can just be bored with something?
Oh God. I mean, you know, I would love to like tour around with like a little comedy show. Like I would love
if it was the same material every night.
Well, but that's the thing. I guess that's a question. No, I mean, like I would ask you, or you were to ask me today, or if I was to say like, I mean, presumably it would be some of the same material, or there would be some things that would be the same, but I also know myself that there would have to be something to change it up. Like something would have mm-hmm. to be new. You would have to find a way to keep it fresh somehow.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that has, I mean, the audience is changing, right? You're changing.
Right. Yeah.
And just trying to be aware of what is different, what is fresh, like, you know, and not just going through the motions. I think like that is something that is easy to do if you have the same text that you have to do over and over again. But there also is something, I've done like a children's show, like a toured a children's show for a little bit, and I played the fox, and like, so you get the words like in your body, and you get your dance moves in your body, and so then you can sort of start paying attention to other things.
Yeah.
And like thing, you know, there something at like, you know, you rely on your muscle memory, and then you get to, you know, sort of...
You can work within that.
Yeah, you work within that, and, like, you sort of see who's in the room. You make eye contact mm-hmm. with people. You, like, make little adjustments. Maybe you try and, you know, goof around with your co-performers or something like that. But I definitely empathize with the fear of getting bored. But it also might be... a barrier that we like, it's sort of like, oh, well, I shouldn't even try because I'll be bored if I have to do it over and over again. But I think in order to get to the place where you can do something over and over again, will take a lot of work, initial work, and a lot of process, which is wonderful.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm glad you're sort of reminding me of this, because I remember now that I had this realization when I was doing work with Girls Leadership Institute, mm-hmm. because in my ESL teaching work, I felt like every class was new. I was kind of intentionally doing that. Even the second year that I taught in the same location, I was like, I'm going to do new stuff, partly because I had students who carried over from one year to the next. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to bore them with mm-hmm. the same old stuff. Mm-hmm. But I was every class, I was like kind of creating a new lesson plan. But with GLI, with the Girls Leadership Institute, I was working with different groups. I was moving around a lot more, like switching up groups, because it was only a 4-session workshop.
Yeah.
But it was the same stuff. Like it was like this written out curriculum that, you know,
script.
Yeah. Like session one, always the same. Session two, you know, especially for the particular grade level. Right. It was a script. And you know, I felt limited by that in some ways. You know, throughout, there were limitations to that frustrated me.
Yeah.
And I started to, after doing it a while, I started to realize how I could appreciate it in the certain way that it was scripted. A, because I didn't have to like be doing a new thing every time. I didn't have to just be improvising so much every time or putting so much thought into like, what am I going to do this next class? Like the prep time was significantly reduced. Yeah. Right. And then being in the room, just what you were saying, like, once I had done it a number of times and I kind of knew the material, I felt like I could really, tune in a lot more to what was actually happening in the room and figure out how to adjust it for people depending on kind of how they were responding or so on. And I started to feel the kind of like virtuosity of that, of like being able to know something and get to a different level with it where you could kind of adapt it to a group because you could listen, because you weren't so caught up in like, what am I going to do next? And, you know, what's the next thing in my plan? Because I haven't ever done it before and I'm trying to like figure out how it works. You could sort of put that aside and be like, how are you actually responding? Like, what's the person to person connection that's happening here? You know? So I think that makes a lot of sense to me, what you said about the fox.
Yeah.
The fox.
Foxy.
The children's show.
Yeah. My song was about
Foxy.
Foxy.
Can you sing it?
Yeah, it's about walking. Uh-huh. Walking is so simple, it's so natural and fun. It really something easy, you can even learn to run. it's about advice for a dolphin, how to get out of a tree, and Foxy.
A what?
A dolphin. So the show
there's
is
a dolphin
called,
in
there's
a tree?
There's a dolphin in a tree.
Wow.
Dolphin in a tree is the show. And there's Beaver, there's Foxy, Badger? No. Owl. And they each have advice of how the dolphin should get down from the tree. And Foxy recommends that
walking. Yeah.
But the problem is dolphins don't have feet.
Yeah, that's challenging.
And so in classic Jess Levy style, Foxy has this whole long song about walking. And then at the end, you realize that, well, the dolphin didn't have feet to begin with, so all that time was wasted. And had you just asked about the October 1st lease to begin with.
Like, by the way, do you have feet? You should have led with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. but can he see the dolphin? Yeah, to know.
Foxy is pretty dumb.
Okay. That's out of keeping with my perception of a fox. I think foxes are, I think of them as clever.
They are. They are traditionally. The archetype of fox is clever. This one is not clever.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Isn't it funny, you know, when you get older and, you know, like I think that music stays in our heads more than other things, you know, and then especially these things that we have, you know, we've developed muscle memory around.
Yeah.
That like that song might be one of the things that, you know, even when you've sort of, if you get to a point where, you know, maybe you've forgotten some things about like where you left your keys or, you know, even like where you lived when you were a kid or something, but then you might still be able to sing that song.
Oh,
you could walk around sing that.
That'll be, I don't know how I feel about that.
I guess that's kind of a morbid subject to upload
some more things.
I do think about that sometimes. So not necessarily like that this children's show song is going to be stuck in my head, but just like when I think about the songs that I know and that are kind of in my internal repertoire, like I think about cultivating that because I'm like, I want to have a good repertoire for when I'm older and I don't have much else going on up there.
Yeah.
At least I want to be able to have some good songs to fall back on.
That's really intense. And I am terrible at memorizing lyrics.
Really?
Yeah, I don't, like, I can't, like, tunes I can do.
Like, the melody, but not the
not
words.
Not the words. Like, and I have a huge problem, like, hearing lyrics in a song, too. It's like a, I don't know, it's just something that I'm bad at.
Do you mishear song lyrics a lot?
All the time.
Do you have funny conversations with people about, like, can you give me an example of
so
mishear?
When I was learning to drive, there was a song, I think it was called, like, Shake It Fast. That was the radio version of Shake Your Ass. Like, shake it fast. Watch yourself. And I thought they were saying, shake your fans. Wash yourself. Shake your fans. Show me what you're working with. That's what I heard.
What did you imagine were the fans?
Perhaps a...
like a part of your body or like someone holding fans?
Perhaps a fan, like a lady, like in the Victorian era,
yeah.
You know, there was a language or, there, I don't know, in Southern culture, there's a language of fans.
And then wash yourself?
I don't know. You know, hip-hop, there's a whole use of metaphor that...
Sure.
You know, that is constantly reinventing itself.
Yeah. I mean, shake your fans.
Shake
could
your
fa- be a lot
it
of things.
It could be anything. It could be the new thing. It could be your tail feathers.
Sure.
It could be your peacock feathers.
Yeah.
In order to attract someone.
And you know how birds kind of wash themselves by, like, shaking their bodies?
Shaking, yes. In dust sometimes.
So
in water. Yeah.
It could be something about birds. Like,
yes.
Shake your feathers, wash yourself.
Yeah. Shake your fans, wash yourself. Shake your fans. Show me what you're working with.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, how are you feeling?
Good. I don't know what time it is.
I don't know. We've been going for about an hour 40.
Okay. So probably close to 12 or a little after.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do sort of the final thing.
Okay. What's the final thing?
The final thing that I've been doing with both Nicolette and Tim, who've come before you, is sort of the final speed round. And it's a...
Oh, okay.
So this is... So the... I don't know if I told you what it is. I prep you? So it's... Don't worry. It's good. So imagine that we have an unlimited budget.
Okay.
And you and I have been commissioned to create... a collaborative art project.
Yeah.
It can be anything.
Okay.
And money is no object. But the only requirement is that you and I both have to have equal creative input.
Okay.
In the project.
Okay.
So what would we do? And let's stand up because I promised our listeners that we would
stand.
And
okay.
So there is a pretty profound tangle of cords, but it feels good to stand up. And maybe, you know, I'm curious about some of your physical theater techniques, and this will help us, you know, finding perhaps the impulse will come from our body.
Of what we're going to create together?
Of what we're going to create together. For me, like, I know that I would want it to be, I'm imagining physical theater. Like,
yeah.
That's something that I yearn for. You can veto it or not. But
no, I think that would be good.
Okay.
I mean, it could involve other people.
Sure, sure. But we're going to do a little bit of it.
Is that what's happening?
What's that?
We're going to do a little bit of it? Or?
Maybe. We don't have to.
Oh, we could just talk about it.
Yeah, this is just, I feel like it might, you know, the method of devising where you're on your feet as opposed to sitting and talking.
Yeah.
As opposed to maybe get out of our head and allow the impulse to come through our bodies. This I had like dreamed about this space. I had looked up this space before we got here, and I know there's all these different rooms, and I was imagining we would be doing some crazy physical theater stuff. And, you know, certainly we're not alone now.
That would be amazing. I mean, I want more people to kind of cultivate that sense of play and then have this sort of repertoire of things that we can like play around with and just be in spaces where we can like play together and create stuff. And then, you know, that would be part of my ideal.
Okay. So I'm hearing like a movement vocabulary. Yeah. Like
just like structures for playing.
What might describe what a structure might look like.
Well, it's interesting because in the Pig Iron Workshop, one of the things that they talk about is, like you just get in a group and you make up a game.
Okay.
Like basic, and it can just be a game where like you don't talk about it.
Right.
You just like what you just did.
Right.
Like that could be the beginning.
So
of like a.
So I found a rubber band on the ground.
So the game could just be like, you know, it develops from whatever you're doing.
So. I don't know. This isn't really a game.
This is a painful game.
It's sort of a game of chicken where we're stretching the rubber band.
Like, who's going to let go first?
Yeah, who's going to let go first? And what does it mean to let go? Like, I don't really want to let go. And I feel guilty for hurting you.
Well, the longer, the further it stretches, the more guilty I feel.
Yeah, and it might just break anyway. And what is it? Because we lose, like, when you let go, like, there's a certain shatter of trust. There's a certain...
Yeah, it's like you win, but you
but
lose.
We're
just holding it taut right now. Yeah. So there's sort of a standoff of...
And there's this potential energy that exists. There's this tension.
It's also really hard. Like, it's muscle, like finger muscles that I don't usually use.
Can you switch your finger?
What if I switch and I drop the rubber band?
Well, then it hurts me, right? And then you have to live with that. But so that was very gentle. So that's nice. So game making.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also interested in working in, like, public space, and it sounded like that was something. And inclusion of, you know, different people, the publics mm-hmm. or a select group of people who is privy to this movement vocabulary.
Yeah. I think it would be very impactful to see that, like they do in the musicals where people are all sort of like have a choreography that they're doing together or something. And, but like the way that transforms public space when you have people who are doing something together, even if it's not, it doesn't have to be a synchronized,
sure.
But, you know.
No, totally. But armed with this like shared knowledge is, yes, I'm part of this group. I know this vocabulary. I love the idea of this game. Like, I love games and I love making up games. So I think... It's sort of like a movement-based public space game.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the objectives, or what might some of the objectives of this game
be?
Well,
one of the things, I mean, and this is what I was thinking about as soon as we stood up, is that it's so easy when you have an object, you know, like that my impulse standing up is to, you know, I've got this microphone, which I actually can't move away from my mouth if I want people to hear me, but because I'm holding this thing, I want to do something with it. Like, I want to make it into something else.
Do it.
Like propovisation or something, you know, like have it like come out of my ear.
So it's coming out of your ear right now. Yeah. You know, I'll describe what's happening.
There was a thing where we had like
you're bopping it against your ear.
Pig iron, where we had to, so your partner would say, and then you'd have to keep going. So, like, if I was like this, and you'd be like "and," like,
and you'd have to do something else.
I'd have to like make it sort of become, you know, it would
shift
be like, and what's next, and what happens after that?
Like that Helen White improv.
Yeah, exactly. It was like the drag.
What's next?
What's next?
What's next? Yeah. And you'd go on this weird adventure.
It was giving me kind of reminders of that.
That game was always so stressful for me, and I don't know why.
Yeah, it's a little stressful.
And you're always on this very convoluted adventure.
Well, you never get to rest. You're always like going, going, going.
Right.
It does have that feeling.
I'm grabbing the clementines now. I don't want to drop them, but...
So juggling could be part of it. You didn't drop it. I guess I dropped it.
Oh, God. Can we reach? In theory, we can. There's just such a tangle.
I'll get it.
Thank you, Jess. Juggling... I mean,
juggling is part of it,
and I wonder...
I can juggle a little.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Okay, good. So, this is actually... Oh, God.
Oops. Hold on, I'm going to put this down.
All right. Jess is going to retrieve the clementine. So, juggling is part of the movement vocabulary. It seems like this is a pretty vast project, and in order to maybe give some framework to it, we have to think of like a name. That's sort of the, like, for me, once a name is decided upon, then it can live in the world and we can sort of continue to develop it.
Okay.
But so the elements of it, what I'm hearing is there's a game. It involves movement vocabulary. It's in public space.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it has some object. Because you were talking about...
Objects, too,
right?
Yeah, I would love objects.
Like what... So I, you know, in this kind of a conversation, I would really go with like free associating. Like if you think about public space, game, collaboration, object, like what image is in your mind?
Marbles, statues, moving statues.
Uh-huh.
Scarves, parachutes.
I've got like street signs, like walk and don't walk signs, okay, or like people looking at signs and being like somehow endowing signs with more meaning than maybe they usually have.
And so now I'm thinking about traffic cones. I'm thinking about construction sites, like barricades. All of these like municipal ephemera things, right? And I love street signs. I also, there's something about like putting a ribbon on it, or like there's some like clowny thing that you can do to transform it and to like welcome, to say that this is part of our game, like that this is fair game. There was a fun a day thing called, was it like ever transforming city, or like there was some little thing where there were these little objects in this platform and you were constantly like changing the landscape. That was really interesting, and that is very much in my mind as we're talking about this too. And so there's like there's a lot of urban planning type stuff that I'm thinking about. Street signs, cones, fabric, ribbon, sparkle, clown, circus.
Making the mundane special.
Yeah.
Like actually coming back to the fox idea, this line it often comes back to me from The Little Prince, where the little prince befriends this fox, and the fox talks to him about how, like, you know, I'm just like a rose is like just a rose, as any rose, but and like when you make it your, like when you tend to it and you make it your rose, it's like a special thing, you know. So he's like, you know, now before I was a fox, I was just a fox to like anyone, that just to you, I was just like an average fox, nothing special. But then you tamed me, and you like made, you know, we you know, like you built a relationship with me, and so now I'm a special fox to you. And
wow.
And maybe there's something about that, like
making
mundane things
our things, like our mundane, our stuff, our moves.
And how would we move through the world differently if we saw, like, the things around us as endowed with special meaning, or even, like, the people around us not just people, but, like...
But they are our collaborators. They're our friends. I mean, what if everything was our artistic collaborator? Like, what if everything was our colleague? Oof.
That's like Daniel Banks used to say, like, you know, wake up in the morning and you say to yourself, like, who's on my team today?
Everything. Was he thinking about specifically people?
I think so, but you know,
and
it seems,
and we're, I think we're moving toward expanding it to like all objects, like who's on our team today. That's a, okay, that feels interesting. So how can we say who's on our team, like our team?
Maybe it could be also be like mundane friends.
Mundane friends. There's something about the word mundane that like I agree with the concept, but the word, the prosody of the word itself
is not working. It actually reflects its meaning, I think, pretty well.
A mundane, yes. We've just tossed the Clementines away, and it looks like they're looking at each other.
Facing off.
A mundane, so
everyday
objects, quotidian,
everyday collaborators.
This is the trick of the game is to like, you know, quickly, I mean, you know, it doesn't need to be perfect, but you know, it will have to find something that clicks that we could like pitch to our funders, you know. Everyday, mundane, Monday.
I mean, I'm thinking about like taming
weekday, taming. There's something also that feels a little
the wild. Yeah. Well,
right. Taming, not colonizing, not imperializing, but when you tame, but you invite someone in, domestication,
there's something that's not,
but
feels
like, but
a little
paving,
too
but
restrictive
like,
about that.
You survey something when you like, you know, you change land to make it a home. What do you have to do? You have to build a foundation.
Oh yeah, that comes like, back to your question about how you make a place.
Yeah.
Feel like home.
Yeah. So what do you, you know, it's, do you put up art? Do you make art there? You invite a collaborator?
I think it's like making home. I mean, it's like we, I feel like we did this as a thing in grad school, not my the program I did before, where we did like an academic presentation, but we brought like lamps and like these different things into the space and kind of tried to make it like in this academic building, tried to make it a home, sort of like a home space in the academy, like transforming the space.
Home base, but everywhere is not our home, right? But I think the really exciting concept is like having like a personal relationship with
my friend.
The different objects. Nice. Who's that?
My friend Alana.
Lana.
She'd probably have something to say about this.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's just the,
there is a sort of intrinsic invitation to say like, yes, everything around me is on my team. It's not mine. I don't own it, but it is, I am welcome to ask these things, these people to be part of my show.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's like a really beautiful like way of life. But what do we call it?
Maybe it's the welcoming project.
Hmm. That's okay. The project. I like welcoming project. It's close. The welcoming project. So it is welcoming. Hello, project. Hey, hi. Hello.
Maybe the welcoming object.
The welcoming committee, welcoming object, I like too.
The welcoming committee.
Welcoming committee,
welcome wagon.
Welcome wagon. Yeah. The welcoming, the object project. This sort of fun, but maybe it's not landing.
Committee
is a little.
The object committee.
Object committee. The object of my desire. The object, like. Object, the welcome project.
Welcome home.
Huh. Ah. That feels the closest. Welcome home.
Okay.
Welcome. Oh, so there's something. So when you go to Burning Man and for the first time, you have an initiation where they make you get out of your car and you roll around in the dust. If you're a virgin, they say you're a Burning Man virgin, and they say to you, "Welcome home." So you're in this liminal place where you can let your freak flag fly, you know. And it like this is that's what they say, like that's the transformation, that's sort of your invitation into this world where you can live as hedonistically as possible.
It's like a rite of passage.
A rite of passage. Thus is an argument for why "Welcome Home" is probably the correct title of the project.
I'm willing to go with it.
Welcome home.
Mm-hmm.
And then the idea is you as a part of like the welcome home team, you are given the authority to imbue people and objects with collaborator status. The process is sort of to be determined exactly. How do you do it? Do you wear a little, you have a signifier, you have something. But then you are allowed or you are compelled to make some sort of public movement piece with these people and objects.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome home. And the idea is that not only are they colleagues, but they're your housemates. They're your, you know, there's a room in your heart for these people and objects. And you can, where can this happen, would you say?
I'd say, you know, public spaces,
public
streets,
spaces.
And I see it happening like in the city.
Yeah. Philadelphia?
Oh, anywhere, any city.
Where in Philadelphia could it happen?
Like in the busy areas of the city where
like,
people are rushing about their business.
Where's a good one specifically? Bless you.
Near City Hall, Love Park.
Love Park?
Yeah.
Is that that's a place?
Yeah. Yeah.
Love
know.
Park.
Center City.
Welcome home. Welcome home. That's good. Jess, What else? Anything else?
I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. This is so nice.
Thanks for taking the time to talk.
Thank you for taking the time. This is so exciting. Episode 3.
Yeah.
Rocking out.
Cozy Zone.
Cozy Zone. What a lovely place and what a beautiful idea. Welcome home. Let's keep talking about it.
Sounds good.
All right. I'm going to give you a hug.
Okay.
Bye, Jess. Thanks so much.
Bye.
We are intimately finding our peaceful cozy zone. And Ben, he interviews friends. It's awkward and then it's cozy zone. Occasionally it's a lovely thing to be nosy in somebody's cozy zone. So please snuggle up sweet. A beautiful thing is cozy zone.